Hello, this is Jeff Fry. I'm a retired IBM fellow and previous CTO of IBM's mainframe platform and very much a long-time mainframe enthusiast. Today, once again, I'm very pleased to host the I Am a Mainframer conversation series sponsored by the Open Mainframe Project. As a Linux Foundation collaborative project, the Open Mainframe Project is intended to help create a mainframe-focused open-source technical community. It's also intended to serve as a focal point for development and use of enterprise Linux in a mainframe computing environment. The goal of the project is to excite the Linux community around the use of the mainframe and to foster some collaboration across the mainframe community to develop and exploit shared Linux tool sets, resources, and services in the mainframe environment. In addition, the project seeks to involve the participation of academic institutions and others to help in assisting creating educational programs aimed at development of mainframe Linux engineers and the developers of tomorrow. So for today's conversation, we have the privilege of speaking with Madge Meyer. And Madge is a public speaker, award-winning author, and the founder of Madge Meyer Consulting. She is also well-known for her unique yet practical approach in advancing innovation and leadership throughout organizations. Her book, entitled The Innovator's Path, How Individuals, Teams, and Organizations Can Make Innovation Business as Usual, was published by John Wiley & Sons and is a 2014 Axiom Business Book Award winner. Madge was the Executive Vice President, Chief Innovation Officer, and Technology Fellow at State Street Corporation. And prior to joining State Street, Madge served as First Vice President for Merrill Lynch's Enterprise Technology Services. In addition to that, earlier in her career, she was a scientific programmer working for my company, IBM, on the NASA orbital space flights. So, Madge, it's a real pleasure to have you on the broadcast today. Let me get started by asking you to tell us a bit more about your background and your experiences with the mainframe.
Fantastic. It's such a pleasure to be invited to have this conversation with you, Jeff. And I was very lucky, I would say, that I really was born in Shanghai, China, went through Hong Kong, came to this country for college. When I was in graduate school, after a year, IBM hired me as a scientific programmer. And actually, I was looking for some job, but I got IBM assigned me to work on the NASA space program. It was so exciting. I was doing the onboard programming for three Gemini, the very last three flights, 10, 11, and 12. And I just anchored that. But before I got on that project, IBM trained me as a mainframe programmer writing assembly code. Mm-hmm. And I was very good at that. I thought it was so exciting. You can make the machine run so fast, processing so many records in literally, you know, a very short time. And I have a passion for mainframe. But when I work on the Gemini system, I always thought, why can't we run the business with this tiny little computer? It was a GE computer, very small. And if we can send somebody to the moon, why can't we run the business? Obviously, yeah. That question was kind of ridiculous at that time because no one thought that it would it literally took decades before the distributed system came on board. But if somebody started thinking about that, I think the world would have changed, right? But I still love mainframe because whatever the distributed system came to the scene, mainframe has the best discipline. All the processes, I think, used to have those yellow books, 40 processes, right, on the mainframe and all that stuff. And I don't think any other, you know, system can compete against mainframe's chip, the high speed of chip, and the unit cost. I'm big on efficiency, bringing business value. So, you know, I always thought, why not people really look at the unit compared with the unit cost? And people don't do that normally. They just look at service as simple, they're small. It goes down, we bring it up. Mainframe, the overall cost seems to be very expensive. But if you have a lot of workload, that will really, you know, help. So throughout my career, I work on a lot of other systems also, mid-range and all that stuff for IBM and with a lot of assignment. And then I became IBM's customer. 1998, I had an opportunity to work for Merrill Lynch. And so I joined them, managed. At that time, Merrill Lynch didn't have any IBM mainframe at all, 98. But coming from IBM, I knew IBM sold Hitachi the chip, you know, let them use it. And the contract supposed to end of 1999. So I put a plan in place, started using IBM CMOS, build a development system. It was a very tiny little, everybody complained to me that such a tiny, I think it was MAR 30, 40 or something, the beginning of CMOS. I say, but that's the future, because whatever we were using or other vendors, they might not sustain the next decade or whatever. So we better migrate to IBM, and we did. Luckily, we did that, and we converted everything to IBM mainframe. And before the other vendors went out of business, literally. And then I joined State Street 2001 after 3 years. And State Street started moving our technology work to Hangzhou, China. And the reason they didn't do, I asked my colleague who really had the relationship with Zhejiang University in Hangzhou. I said, why didn't you have them develop a system? It's much cheaper, labor much cheaper there. He said, we don't have any you know, data center there. I say, oh, we can build a data center since I manage all the global technology. So I was working with my colleague to build a data center. And we really didn't have budget. 2002, the budget was very challenging after 9/11. And we worked with IBM, and IBM really helped us out as a partner. And we started, you know, building, but that we used a different P-series from IBM. But IBM's relationship with State Street really grew a lot. Literally, you know, from mainframe, open systems, and the whole spectrum of the service. Later, we did the early test of Linux on the mainframe. I remember that was very forward-thinking when we made it work.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Well, I share your enthusiasm for the mainframe environment, and you know, we talk on other broadcasts about, you know, some of the challenges and getting people to really appreciate the unit cost and the cost of ownership of a platform that does so much work. But for today, let's get into your book. Can you tell us a little bit about the book, the Innovator's Path, and maybe give us some examples on how industry professionals can use the power of this?
Yes, I give you a little bit. How did I even get involved in getting? I was offered a contract by Wiley, and when I was giving a speech in New York City, talking about our technology innovation. State Street, the global infrastructure, technology infrastructure group, received 32 industry innovation awards when I was managing it from 2001 and to 2011. And so I was talking about how we did all these things. So the chief editor asked me to write a book. Then I thought about it. He really was interested in writing a book about our innovation. I said, no. It's not about innovation, because by the time I finish writing, it will be old. It's about the discipline people need to be successful innovators, because my view is everyone is innovative because everyone has creativity. However, many times either the education or the company's process, culture, whatever, really stifle people's creativity. And so I thought, let me figure out how to help people to be innovative, even in large corporations. Obviously, entrepreneurs are all innovative, but they still need certain discipline to be successful. And, you know, my background, Chinese, we always talk about discipline, right? And so I thought it's 8 disciplines. First one is listen. I've been using listen for many, many years. Even when I was at IBM, I remember I was the CIO for IBM Boulder, and I told the internal business executive, I say, I'm listening. You're my customer, honor guest. And you tell me what you need, and I'm going to, you know, provide you the service you need to be successful. That was the way I look at things, you know. But a lot of people don't listen very, you know, carefully. So each chapter or each discipline, I have 3 levels. First chapter is listen. The low level is selective listening, which we all do that all the time. Second one is engaged listening, which is very good. You listen every word the person is telling you. But the best is deep listening, is beyond the words. What else the person really, subtle message there, they didn't really tell you, right? The body language, the everything. And second one is vision, lead. Lead is leadership, right? But a lot of people in leadership position, they don't have a vision. They're managers, they're not leaders. I look at a leader should have a vision. What's the vision? It's sense of tomorrow, not today. Now, IBM had done such a fantastic job that transforming constantly. It's what's tomorrow, what we need. If you look at mainframe, it keeps going, right? It never stops. And that's the key point, you know, for any company or even personal. Where is your vision of tomorrow? Third one is once you have the vision, you know where you want to go. How do you position? There are 3 levels of positioning, right? Reactive is not good, right? Predictive is not good enough. Look at the market still crash, even though they can predict all the ones crash before, they won't do it again. But they never know the predictive only what's something unknown. We don't know. How do you do that? It's the anticipatory. You want to anticipate what might happen. That should be the way to position. Promote. We don't do a very good job, you know, promote. It's the value to the customer. A lot of vendors come in and say, here's my product. I have this, we deal with 600 vendors, right? Many people will tell you how great they are and all that. I always say, stop right here. It's not about how great your product is, because tomorrow somebody will beat you. It's what value you bring to State Street, right? Why should I buy your product, not your competitor's product? That's the way you promote differentiator. What is your differentiator? Another thing is name recognition. It's a first impression. The fact IBM called mainframe may not be the best thing. You know, I've suggested to IBM, you got to call something else, because there's a connotation. It's old, it's a dinosaur, it's passé. People don't even want to get involved in the mainframe. But if you don't have that connotation, like in China, young people love mainframe because they don't have the connotation. They learn English as is. They figure that's the best, you know. We send a lot of young students, we hire a lot of young students to work on mainframe. They loved it. They say, oh my God, you know, it takes us hours and hours to do on the open systems side. But mainframe is already there. They have all these disciplines. Yeah. And maybe
I'm sorry to interrupt you though, Angie, but you've touched on a lot of things there. I happen to agree with you on many of the points you just made. You know, as an architect and developer, you know, I could go on and on about the innovation in the mainframe over its, you know, its long and illustrious history. What I find though is that You know, I'd be interested in having you tell us a little bit about how the book has, you know, how it can inform or help people, professionals who could benefit from the use of mainframe technology in their shops. I mean, you touched on this a couple times. How do we capture that? How do we communicate that? And, you know, what's that got to do with innovation, right, in terms of the use of the mainframe? We have a lot of interesting challenges, and we'll get to those in just a second. But can you help me with what advice would you give, for example, to companies, to fully take advantage of the mainframe? And how do we communicate that, right, effectively so that we can overcome some of the challenges, some of the perceptions that you alluded to?
Okay. I have a great story. I think story is the best thing to make a point. When the cloud computing came out, everybody tried to understand. Everybody was confused. What is this cloud? And they even make joke of it. You know, State Street is a financial services, so most are bankers. Okay, they're not technologists. And our CIO that time was Joe Antonelis. I love Joe. His background is from a mutual fund, pension fund, investor services, and all those. But he's just so smart. He picked up a lot of the technology from dealing with me because I tried to explain all these things to him. So he asked me one day, he said, "Madge, nobody can explain clearly and about the cloud. Can't you try it?" And so I did. After I finished, you know what he said? That summarized the whole story. He said, "Oh, they try to make the open systems look like a mainframe." I said, "Oh my God, Joe, you really got it." Yes. Mainframe itself, it's a cloud. People don't get it. Even there were some IBM executive I was dealing with that time, and I remember State Street, all our executives visit Armonk. There were one IBM executive. "We don't know what mainframe plays a role in the cloud environment." And I was sitting there. Sam was there. Ron Lowe was there. He was our CEO and all that stuff. I thought I should shut my mouth. I was the lowest ranking person in the room. But I just couldn't. I said, "I am so sorry. I have to disagree with you. I think you're wrong. Mainframe is a cloud by itself. The one box is a whole cloud. It's all virtualized inside and all that." See, I have the benefit of, I did IBM's BSAM, QSAM development, BTAM, QTAM. I did a lot of access methods, telecommunications also. So I really understand the internal, how it works, and how the virtualization works and all that stuff. The cloud environment, VMware, we implemented very early because with my virtual machine background, and I totally got it. So we bought the VMware before EMC even heard of VMware, probably, you know. I bought it from Diane Greene, who's the founder with her husband, and to virtualize open systems, you know. So when the cloud name came out, State Street had all the system virtualized already. We were already there. Why we were so advanced? It was from the mainframe. Now, here is the thing. Number one, IBM really should think about, I even suggested to IBM, they should call Universal Server or whatever, just call Z-Series, right? A new name to make people not too stuck in that mainframe, almost like so old, like an antique furniture kind of a feeling, right? And because every time you talk about mainframe, they think about IBM's a huge machine room, and, you know, the console is like a piano size and all that stuff. But that's not the new mainframe. People don't get it, you know. And I think totally need a facelift or something to change people's perception. Unfortunately, perception is reality. And it's very, I talk about that in my book, a lot of people stuck in the mud. It's so hard to get them out of that mud, right? Secondly, there is a way of doing that. I do have some suggestion for people try to sell the service to companies, all that stuff. And when people talk about it, they usually use the ZOS terminology and all that stuff. But if you just run all the Linux on the mainframe, it's a totally different operating system and all that stuff.
Yep.
So there got to be, you know, totally different. I would, number one is talk about the capabilities. Because when people hear that term mainframe, they already block it. I don't want to hear. I know a lot of companies right now in their strategic plan, they want to migrate off mainframe in next 5 years. I just got one email from somebody talk about their company is going to do that. Why? They never look at unit cost. Second piece is unit cost, not only capability, unit cost, right? And the unit cost is much lower if you can figure out how to do that. I did that when I was just to show our executive the value, because they only look at overall cost. If you think of millions of dollars to get a mainframe, but what they didn't know is how many workloads you can run on it, and you know how the company benefit from that. That is powerful, because in my book, the first beginning I introduce what is innovation. It's change which creates business value. It's a very simple concept. There are only two numbers, business value. One is revenue. If you can help the company bring in more revenue, right? The second one is the operating budget, expense. You can reduce the operating expense. Now, if company has a huge amount of workload, that is definitely a game to put on the mainframe to run it, you know. And, you know, sometimes people don't do a good job. Is they talk about, it is important to talk about all the good things, you know, that chip is, I don't know, the speed now, it's so fast, right? More than twice than the open systems, the faster server. Even your competitor, IBM's competitor, that CEO and founder of that one company, is your CS competitor. I say, every time I heard you speaking, you always complain about IBM. What did IBM do better than you so you got you so mad? It took him 20 minutes to answer my question. And he finally said, they're cheap. We cannot beat them. They're still...
Yeah. So this is fascinating. I assume, you know, you gave one definition of innovation. You know, I expect that part of... what's necessary for innovation is to break through preconceptions about things and exploration and innovation along, as you said, towards business value. But it takes a certain objectivity and a certain willingness to kind of break through preconceived notions. And that's really kind of critical for the mainframe, because as you point out, there are lots of preconceptions about the mainframe, ideas about, you know, mainframe, where people may have been exposed to, you know, the mainframe technology decades ago and don't even really have an appreciation for what the platform can do now. I assume that your book, which by the way is in the mail to me, I'm gonna sit down and read it. I assume the book talks about some of that stuff, how to break through preconceived notions and biases, because that would be really helpful to our clients who want to take a look at the mainframe and make use of this valuable platform. And sell others on its value.
Actually, I did a speech for IBM. I think I think it's IBM Software. Steve Mills' event. It was about 9,000 people in Las Vegas or somewhere, a huge event. And they give me 10 minutes to talk about it. And I started from mainframe, obviously, and all that stuff. Later, it was really interesting. I talk about the unit cost reduction. You can be a shining star. You see, you can go in tell all the executives, you know, breakthrough news. They don't care. But if you say, I can reduce your operating budget by such, they're going to listen. That's the one thing I figured it out. And when the minute I joined State Street, because State Street was over 200 years old when I joined them. I think now they're 225 years old or something. And nobody wants to change. It was, everything was so old. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, I got to get, they still have the real old mainframe system, very, very old. You know, and I say, how do you do that? They say, oh, Madge, don't make any change. You know, if right. you're not successful, they're going to fire you, you know.
Yeah.
That's the fear of failure. That's, I say, commit. How do you commit to innovation? How do you replace calculated risk-taking, right, to this fear of failure, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what I did, in my book, I didn't use the mainframe, but I used the network. I want to migrate from, it's the same thing, a frame relay network to MPLS, the multi-protocol the label switching, the IP network. And nobody wants to, are you crazy? They say, you touch the network, everything will go down and all that. Even top-level executives all disagree with this approach. So I bet my job with my boss. I say, Joe, if I give you 10 million, would you let me do a study 90 days? I give you $10 million operating budget back. Now, after 9/11, 10 million is very attractive. He say, what you guarantee? I say, my job. You can fire me if I cannot, you know, give you back 10 million. Because I said, wow. I really don't know the number until I look at it. And so we did a 90-day study. It turns out it was $30.7 million savings from that one project, if I can replace it. Because they got lines by each business unit, have separate point-to-point network lines going back and forth, but nothing recover anything. So I suggest to do two loops, right? To totally diversify AT&T and Verizon globally, two loops, go through all our offices as well as our clients' offices. And so we have total redundancy, one loop, with a different Cisco router, another loop with Nortel router, so totally diversify. By the end of this project, 9 months later, we give the company back $42 million savings.
Incredible.
Getting rid of all the old stuff. So all it takes, if they can walk you with example, obviously you don't want to tell which company, but if you can capture some company, how they leverage the new mainframe, let's say consolidate 2,000 server onto your mainframe, run Linux, just the pure Linux on it. I remember I did one of those business case a long time ago at State Street. And, how much savings you can be. Even the human resource, the staffing savings. I remember mainframe, we only have 10 people. We never add or subtract. And our MIP grow from 8,000 MIPs to, by the time I left, I don't know, 24,000 or whatever, a huge number. And never grow the staffing. But the open system was thousands of people, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, people doing it. And it didn't even run that much workload. So all it takes, in my book, I have a very detailed example, all the components you're going into, like the depreciation, maintenance costs, and staffing costs, all that stuff going into, the business case. You just compare year to year, right? The old existing budget versus the new, what you can do. If you tell the customer, I'm going to bring you business value, your business, not IBM business, you're going to have the listener. Our executive, it only took us 5 minutes with the CEO when we show the bottom line, say we're going to save you $30.7 million by the end of 9 months. He said, done, go. Didn't even want to hear the detail. Number talks. It doesn't matter, big company, small company, private company, or public company. Everybody wanted profit margin. And those are the numbers can help your profit margin.
Well, this is great, Madge. I think that, you know, in my experience with IBM, you know, for quite some time, we've been looking for and searching for ways to articulate the value of the mainframe platform and to help organizations who did understand the value of the mainframe communicate and sell the use of the mainframe within their organizations more effectively. And it sounds like your book would be a valuable tool to those folks. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to the broadcast to go out and take a look and see if the book gives some helpful and useful recommendations for articulating the value of the platform and some techniques for doing that. Let me ask you one more question. I'm sensitive to the time here. What advice would you give, do you have for other women working in the IT industry?
Oh, my God. I love that because I've been giving so many speeches lately is to help women. A lot of companies organize women's. There's a lot of focus in growing women, you know, in their the high-level ranking executive and all that stuff. And very, very easy. I tell you, the opportunity, I even told my husband, I wish I was born now rather than so many years ago. We really struggled during my career because I was a woman, minority woman in a man's world. It was very, very challenging. But I never miss a bit because I have so many wonderful, wonderful men help my career. And Sam is one of them, right? Mr. Ron Rowe, who wrote the foreword of our book, is another one. He's the one. He and Joe Antonetti promoted me to EVP, which I was told going into State Street, I would never be EVP because they only had one, which was the CIO. They had to break their own policy to promote me. And after I delivered $42 million to the company, you know. And now innovation, the speed of innovation is much faster, and the world is much more acceptable for innovation, okay? Before, nobody wants to change, right? It was so hard. But now change is constant. And many companies, executives, the worst is the middle tier of management. Their fear of they have too much invested in their career, and they got probably children in college or whatever. They really don't want to rock the boat, I call. And they are difficult to break through. But my mother always taught us, if you hit the boat, hits the shore, you don't hit it again, right? You don't butt head with your boss if they say don't want change. You go right or left. And that was the story I put in. I was told, no, we're not going to make any network change. Final decision was made. Now, I decided, I'm going to make a deal with my boss. Why should he change his mind unless you give him some benefit? So that's how the business value came to my head. The 2 seconds I had to walk from the conference room to his office. And I said, I'm going to give him $10 million back. So it's a sheer risk. And he liked it because he used to be a football player at Harvard University. So he likes those bets, you know. He said, okay, Madge will be fired after 90 days. I said, only if I don't deliver $10 million. So he wrote it there. And guess what? We delivered $30.7 million as promised. And then we actually delivered $42 million, exceeded their expectation. So for women, think that I have women heard my story, used it, successful, got promoted, you know. And there are a lot of really good story is innovation. Think about how do you make change, even your job, even if you do, let's say I'm a server administrator, how do I automate this mundane work, right, and make it better, or even suggest an idea, you know, to do it better. There's always a way to do it better. And ask other women, you know, that's what networking, my book, one of the chapters, connect. Connect broadly, you have different perspectives, right? So how do other people do? I can, because State Street didn't create any technology. We just early adopter of, or we pushed the vendor, we even pushed one of IBM's product, and to be better, we want them to add this, add that, it become a really good database product for, you know, customers like State Street. And if you think of a better way and you partner with the vendor, hopefully they will listen. That's why listening is so important. At least give people a chance to voice it. You know, I've worked for some boss just say, don't even come in and tell me anything new. I don't want to hear. I did have people like that. And then what I did is I go underground and until I can prove the business value. Then I bring to them. When they give me okay, I'm done already. You know, I used to code these programs so fast. They say, imagine, we don't want you to make the change. And I remember they used random access to update. It was so slow. IBM Stockholder Relations. I was managing there. And I just weekend, I rewrote it to do a serial because I calculate how many tapes, how fast it spins. It should be hour and a half rather than like 24 hours sometimes random access update. And when I was able to prove it, they said, go ahead, do it. I said, it's already installed. It was done. So women should think about using innovation as their opportunity to shine because innovation has no discrimination. As long as you can prove business value, none of the executives would discriminate just because you're a woman, you're not good. They may ask your CFO to validate. So, you know, I always have the CFO there to figure out those, you know, number savings. We don't just say it. We had the CFO proof the saving. Not only that, we don't just spend it. A lot of people save some money. They spend it in other things. I never touch it. I wouldn't let my people touch it until they have another business case. Can do better. Then we touch the money to invest it in something else. But we always handed money back to the company.
Very good.
So if they take a look at my book, because a lot of technology people say, well, I don't have to look at promo. I don't need to, you better do that. I always told people, if you cannot articulate what you have done, how do you get the manager to reward you, right? But the articulate is not that easy, you know. A lot of people don't know how to. I watch Shark Tank a lot. I love that show because it's a lot of learning. You look at it, when they walk in, it's the whole presentation, right? The investor not only invests in your idea, it's personality, right? They look at you as a person. Do I want to invest in you, you know? Do you have the commitment and all that? And I always told people, it's the whole thing. Just working hard is not good enough. I call working smart. Sometimes people get mad at me. Oh, you think I don't work smart, I'm not smart. No, you're smart, but you don't use it, right? How do you mean smart? Street smart also, you know? Sam asked me once, I saw him at one of the events. He said, how do you know all these things so much? I said, Sam, IBM, you taught me all about management and technology. I learned everything from IBM. But IBM was so nice. I was so naive. When I got to Merrill Lynch, I learned street smart because they all want to kill me, you know, and I couldn't understand. I just tried to do a job. Why people want to kill me? Then I learned how to be street smart, Dr. Bullets, I call. And it, not only duck the bullets, is you shine your wing over. You know, how do you do that? And I think women has a huge door open for them. The opportunity is there. All they have to do is don't be afraid to speak up, right? If you have a good idea, but don't just say, oh, I have a great idea, we should do that. I have people come in and say, Madge, I got a great idea, I saw a product, and I want to buy it. I say, okay, so what's the benefit to the company? Well, I don't have to work overtime. Well, I say, well, that's not good enough. But if you think 1,000 people can save how much, you know, manpower, right? We can save 1,000 people's labor, or we can do that, or benefit more people. You give me a better business case, because when you don't work overtime, it's a zero business case, because these people don't get paid for overtime, right? I say that's not good enough. Think broader. Think the business value. And then, you know, once you have a system helping people, and then you can drive the innovation down. They know when they'll come to my office to show me is when they have a good, positive business case. You know, it is a wonderful, wonderful way of looking at it. I think it's exciting. It's helped them to do better. And a company can never ignore you when you bring business value to them. I think it doesn't matter what company, they all look for it. Even startup company, they all look for, how do I get more customers, right? How do I make more money? How do I get more investors? And no investors say, go ahead and spend the money, I don't really care. So I think if they look at my book, these are very, very basic. These are not all the discipline, just the key ones. And the last chapter is evolve, never stop. That is a good example of IBM mainframe. IBM, I remember at one point in the 80s, mainframe, even IBM thought, oh, we just get the revenue, you know, we're not making any change and all that. And when Lou Gerstner came in, I was managing all corporate IT for IBM. And I remember overnight they asked us to move all the headquarters people from Somers back to either Poughkeepsie or Fishkill, East Fishkill, because Lou Gerstner said he wanted to reinvent mainframe. And it really was the best vision he had. And IBM started turning around the mainframe. It became a, I call, hot item again. And but they never changed the name. I'm still after IBM to change the name.
Well, okay. Madge, we're going to have to probably leave it at that. I think that's all good advice and good insight. And, you know, I like it when you said, you know, innovation does not discriminate. And that is so true. So, listen, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you today. Best of luck. I will, you know, like I said, I've already ordered your book, and I'm looking forward to reading it. But it's been a pleasure talking with you, Madge, and hopefully maybe sometime we can meet face-to-face and discuss all of these topics in even more depth. Thank you very much.
I learned a lot from you, the new mainframe and how good it is. And I haven't been keeping track of it lately, but I'm still excited with the future.
Thank you very much, Madge.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that does it for us today, and we'll see you next time on another broadcast of the show. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.